Good afternoon and welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy, and today we're talking about life after oil. That may not be tomorrow, but it probably will be in the next couple of years or maybe several decades. How well is Alaska positioned to survive? Can it diversify? What role will entrepreneurs play? Do we have a good climate here for entrepreneurs? Why and why not? We've assembled a knowledgeable crew here in the studio to talk about this. We have Joe Morrison, a financial services consultant who recently managed the municipality's 49th State Angel Fund, Zoe Marudis, who founded Bambino's Baby Food here in Anchorage, and Stephanie Holthouse, coming from a career in the corporate world, now the Associate Director of Philanthropy for the Nature Conservancy, and very interested in launching social entrepreneurship as a movement here in Anchorage. Welcome to you all. So happy to have you. Before I go on, I also want to say we're expecting to hear from some people in the course of the show. I think we're going to hear from Jason Smith, who is an entrepreneur here and an Iraqi veteran who's also started something called Alaska Natural Organics. So we may hear from him. I expect to hear from Catherine Jernstrom of the Boardroom, who's part of that entrepreneurial ecosystem we're going to talk about today. I'm excited to hear from Eric McCallum, a local angel investor. And I think we're going to hear from Ian Seward, a recent winner of the Pathways to Prosperity Award out of Juneau for a company he's co-founded in Haines. So not in Anchorage, not in Fairbanks, not in Juneau. Fairweather Ski Works. So before we get talking, many of the resources and businesses we talk about today are linked on our website at alaskapublic.org. So if you hear something you're interested in or a meeting you think you want to go to, check out our website. And lastly, we want to hear from you. If you have questions about how entrepreneurship works or questions about a company or even an idea that you want to vet with these experts here, we'd love to hear from you. If you're in Anchorage, it's 550-8433. If you're out of state, it's 1-888-353-5752, and that works around the state of Alaska. You don't have to be out of state for that to work. So let's go back through our guests here in the studio. Joe, welcome. So glad that you could make it. I encountered you off and on at business workshops and things like that, and the fact that you had worked with the 49th State Angel Fund made me want to ask you, what did you learn there? You're not there now. You're now a consultant. But if you were to share something about the climate and entrepreneurship here, share that with us.
Yeah, I think that the Alaska climate for entrepreneurship is strong. I think that Alaska wants to invest in itself. I think that Alaska doesn't have the same infrastructure pieces that other more developed economies have necessarily. Perhaps there's more focus on entrepreneurial education. That can be the entire focus of some MBA programs.
Mm-hmm.
Regular entrepreneurial meetings, a culture of openness where you're willing to talk about quote unquote your idea. When I started and I started working with the 49th State Angel Fund, no one wanted to talk about their idea because everybody was convinced.
You're going to steal my idea.
We have the next big thing. Well, you know, we've all had ideas. Everybody at this table's had ideas.
It's just the beginning. Yeah, that's the beginning.
Are you willing to work and, you know, have a heart attack and work for 6 years, two of them with no money and, you know,
sounds like so much fun.
Yeah, so let's do entrepreneurship in Alaska.
Yeah, that sounds
great.
Okay, let's go over to Zoe. And your company is Bambino's Baby Food. Yes?
Yes.
And I sort of want to ask you, did you think I'm crazy for starting a business in Alaska? But heck, you know, how'd you get started?
I think many times I was actually brought up with that question, am I crazy starting a business in Alaska and not trying to take it down to the lower 48? The fact that it's a baby food company and Alaska doesn't have enough babies to go in complete market.
Come on,
and
people,
things like
help Zoe.
But we definitely have some issues that need to be addressed, and that's why I had created the baby food company, to creating a natural, kosher, and organic, fresh frozen versus the shelf stable that's been around for the last 60 years.
Yeah.
It's time to move on from it and give the families the opportunity to have that fresh product that tastes delicious and still have the nutritional contact that it desires.
Yeah. So we're going to talk a little bit later also about social entrepreneurship. And although you're an entrepreneur, this has a social thread to it. And we'll come back and talk about So, Stephanie, let's talk about you. You're coming on as an advocate for social entrepreneurism. You haven't actually started. You've been in business, but you've been in sort of the corporate side of things. But tell me a little bit about why this idea hooked you, social entrepreneurism, and what you're doing about it.
I think initially it happened when I became a coach for University of Washington social entrepreneurship competition. I coached a team from Bangladesh that wanted to build bricks out of sugarcane waste that would be locally producible and it was more sustainable product. And so I got kind of interested, and there were 20 teams in the finalists, so there were a lot of interesting ideas. And I was in Seattle at the time, and they have several different support networks for social enterprise, and a lot of social enterprise is going on there. So I got interested and got hooked, and then I was back in Alaska and met Yaso Thiru from APU, and she has been doing a lot of research into social enterprise, and so she talked me into going to India and taking a look at social enterprise there. So
the
I
deep
did.
Dive. The
yeah.
deep dive.
Yeah. And so now I just am very fascinated and interested. And I'm really hoping that Anchorage can become a place where social enterprise takes off and is supported.
Yeah. I think there's a spectrum here that we should try to describe. And Joe, I'm going to ask you to leap in there, warning you. Before the show, we talked a little bit about this. There is sort of venture capital, angel investment, but there's, on the other side, Stephanie made a remark, but not everybody needs that kind of money. So could we talk a little bit about the sort of spectrum of entrepreneurism? And we're going to hear from Eric later, and I think he represents one far end of that spectrum. But could you just, for people who aren't entrepreneurs, like me, you know, who want to know more?
Sure. Well, I think most of us are familiar with entrepreneurs in our lives and sort of looking around our community, and they're what I would call micro businesses, right? I got a loan from dad, I got a loan from mom, and I created my coffee shop, my beauty parlor, my secondhand clothing store, or my chain of, music stores, you know, Mammoth Music back in the day.
Yeah.
That said, so venture capital is concerned with scale. It's concerned with reaching a certain number, typically in revenues, in order to grow a business to the point to where it becomes profitable enough and large enough that it can pay back its initial investors and compensate for that risk. Mm-hmm. And that's not the kind of business we've seen a lot here in Anchorage, Alaska.
More mammoth that sort of thing, family.
Yeah,
business.
And you know, every business has positive social impact to the community, and we're passionate about every kind of business that we can create in our community, the more the better, regardless of scale.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things you hinted at in your opening was after oil, you know, if the state of Alaska as a community, if we're thinking what is our future look like 20 to 40 years from now, economic drivers happen at scale. They mm-hmm. happen from large companies.
Mm-hmm. I have this impression that people think because we got a new target, we're doing well. But one of the conversations I had with Kai Holland from APU is that is jobs. That there's certainly something wonderful about that, or Sears or Costco or many of these big stores that, and we were so excited when we get one, you know, like an Olive Garden or something like that. But he was saying we have to make things here and the money has to stay here. And that's not necessarily what happens sometimes when we have these we think we've arrived because we have an Olive Garden. We think, you know, finally we're big enough to get that. But that's really not what's going on because that money is leaving the state. So am I right?
Yes, I think so.
Yeah. So, you know, the hurdles that we have to overcome that we've been talking about is small population size. And in that being small number of consumers, small number of, you know, venture capitalists that have the money to, although there are rich people here, but they're not doing that, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, and there is some chicken or the egg question. And so previously, there wasn't a lot of available venture capital, nor was there a lot of culture of people taking that kind of risk in our community.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're starting to build that. So whether that's the chicken or the egg, the other half of it is, okay, where are the entrepreneurs who you can trust with the initial $250,000 investment, where you're looking at $1 million investment later, and then a third milestone that might be $2.5 million, where is that person that you can trust? And that's the next part of the equation.
Yeah, yeah. Are there some successes we could cite? Because it's sounding daunting. I mean, you know, what's gone well? Or I mean, Zoya, let's talk about you.
Well, one thing I wanted to mention is transportation is one of the key issues of concern within the state. Everything is a little bit more expensive to get here, or it takes a little bit longer, and then you have to ship it down to the lower 48 or distribution around the world. So that has always kind of hindered people's thoughts. Mm-hmm. One thing that, you know, many times our barges come in full and then leave empty. There's many different opportunities, and those are the ones that I've tried to tackle and had conversations with multiple people regarding these things. We're far enough in the future that we're not that far away. Yes, Alaska is far away, and it sounds kind of remote. And
The world's, you know, getting smaller.
Yes, and yeah. You know, our population isn't that great, but at the same time, we're expanding. We're no longer in the backseat,
yeah.
You know, and for so many years, you always say, well, Alaska's, you know, known for its energy and natural resources and things like that. Well, it's time to move on, to expand. Mm-hmm. And with the baby food company that I had experienced is, well, yes, we can manufacture. We have freezing temperatures for a long time of
the year. We used to have freezing
year.
Temperatures.
Well, with the exception of this year, definitely. Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, there's the transportation can be overcome.
Mm-hmm.
And give the people and entrepreneurs the opportunity to expand to other areas instead of it being a hindrance. Alaska is such a unique place that you're like, oh, wow, it's manufactured in Alaska. You know, that's,
well, I'm thinking about how water with an Alaska label on it somehow is better than water any place from
definitely,
beer.
Definitely.
Or beer. Yeah.
Beer's
yeah.
been wildly successful.
Yeah. And so it's actually, you're riding on your reputation as the frontier.
Yes, a pioneer, a frontier.
And you know, the audience is potentially outside for that. Mm-hmm. Not only inside, but also outside. So you can really overcome that audience barrier, you know, who's I mean, you can feed the world, right? I mean,
yes,
you can.
Can you imagine healthy babies
everywhere? Yeah, so you don't just have to feed Alaska babies. And so
definitely.
So you must be thinking about that in your business. Are you shipping outside yet?
We're in Kansas, so we have a few stores in Texas, actually Austin and in Houston right now that have started buying our products. And then our first place that was in Florida, in Tampa, they started buying our first products, and we were sending our samples there and testing it in the middle of summer and seeing how things were. Mm-hmm. Because we have teething cookies that don't require refrigeration, but our baby food itself is frozen.
Frozen, yeah, right. It's a temperature advantage.
But yes.
I mean, when you made those connections, talk a little bit about overcoming the hurdles. I mean, you just go fly to Florida, and I mean, what happens?
Just start making calls, being persistent, meeting them and just going up in person, and mm-hmm. you'll get a lot of doors shut, but one will open, and
yeah.
you just have to continue doing that. I didn't have what my original background is. My parents have a Greek establishment called Pizza Olympia here in town, so I had the cooking and the Greek and Italian heritage and things like that, and then I started studying medicine while I was in Texas, so I kind of combined the two to bring it together. And then that's where my first connections were, because I was living out of state
mm-hmm.
and studying there. And then I combined the two and just start driving around and start
yeah.
calling and keep yeah. going.
You know, I guess your family had a business. So you in terms of the entrepreneurial education that we're talking about, that people, it isn't a new idea, but there are different scales of businesses. Like
yes.
your family is not trying to open a restaurant in Seattle and open,
yes.
you know.
It's very different.
It's like
very,
more
very
of that
different.
Lifestyle entrepreneur scaled to Anchorage, really.
And going into the larger scale of FDA and USDA approval, so you can become recognized within the United States or an mm-hmm. international company.
Mm-hmm. And that's something you've tackled, but
yes.
your family hasn't.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, so I was just wondering about your education. I mean, I think you said you went to medical school or you studied medicine.
Yes, I studied geriatrics and gynecologic oncology.
So you're used to going out and getting information and learning, and that's a big part of being an entrepreneur, I guess. Like, if there's
very
a part,
much.
Like, how do I overcome this hurdle? Well, let me find out how I overcome, you know, do some research, make some calls. So do you feel like you're a natural entrepreneur then?
I'm trying. I think it took me almost a year and a half to establish our trademark. And that was one of the biggest things that I thought it was just absolutely amazing, because it was constantly geared that I had to go and see an attorney or try to establish it on my own, or a way of trying the funds. And I wanted to allocate whatever funds that I had was into the product, not into the business development at that time. So I was trying to find, that was like the balance of trying to find out, where do you allocate the limited funds that you have to get this idea going, and then actually contact an investor. Mm-hmm. And because you don't want to go in blind and give them half information or not, you know, things that haven't
your
been researched through.
Your credibility goes away very
yes.
quickly.
So everything you present to them, and you know, have to tackle, what can they ask me? What are they thinking? You know, why would they want to invest in me? Or they want to make sure that you succeed with yeah. their money.
Yeah. You know? So yeah. you actually have investors now. You're not just funding it yourself at this point.
Right now, I'm still funding it myself, but we are working with investors mm-hmm. to take it to the next level.
Mm-hmm. So to answer that question earlier, where are the entrepreneurs? So right here, it's Zoe.
Yeah. We have one.
We have more than one.
Yes, and we expect to hear from some more today on the radio. So let me throw out our number for our listeners. If you, there it is, 550-8433 in Anchorage, or 1-888-353-5752 outside of Anchorage. And we have guests in the studio. We're talking about life after oil, what's the climate for entrepreneurship in Anchorage? And we have Joe Morrison, formerly of the 49th State Angel Fund, and a consultant in the studio with us. We have Zoe Marudas, from a founder of Bambino's Baby Food, our on-the-site entrepreneur right here today. And Stephanie Holthouse, who's been in the corporate world but now is an associate director of philanthropy at the Nature Conservancy, and really trying to grow in the eventually foster in Anchorage sort of a social entrepreneurship climate. Why don't we go, we haven't heard that much from you, Stephanie. Let's talk a little bit about what you see here in Anchorage. You talked about how you got interested through APU right. and Yaso Thiru. What do? You sit down and make notes of this would be a good idea, or that, you know, how do you get started?
I think for me, because my interest is in more in the climate than it is in a specific enterprise of any kind, it's a broader look. So we started a meetup group, actually, so that we could get to know social entrepreneurs, find out who's thinking about social enterprise in Anchorage, and bring folks together that are like-minded.
I want to ask what that's yeah. like. I mean,
it's interesting. I had not been in a meetup group before we uh-huh. started this one. So it's interesting. We have about 50 people that have signed up for this group online.
Uh-huh.
It's basically a online bulletin board kind of thing.
Yeah.
But our meetings have not been any more than 10 people, and often less, but we've only had 3 meetings, so we're still yeah. kind of exploring.
And I guess if you get the right 10.
Yeah, and we're meeting in a, this is all just kind of part of the same thing. We're meeting at the Innovation Lab at the library, and the library is trying to foster groups of people that have similar interests, kind of in the same way that the meetup groups are. So it's an interesting place.
This is sort of that climate. And let's talk about, but let's finish with you. I'm just sort of interested in, do ideas bubble up at these meetings?
Yes. So people generally arrive with their ideas, and then they talk about their idea, and other people have ideas about that idea.
Mm-hmm.
So there's an exchange.
So cross-fertilization.
It's interesting. For me, it's reassuring to know that there's a bunch of people out there thinking about a lot of different things, mm-hmm. all of which are designed to have a positive impact on our culture and our community.
You know, I think we should define social entrepreneurship just because people think, you know, they may think, I think I get it, but do I really get it? So help us a little bit.
I think a lot of people think there are a lot of different definitions for it. When I think of it, I think of it as an enterprise that's solving a social problem or meeting a social need using entrepreneurial tools. So it's not necessarily a for-profit or nonprofit. It's not defined in those terms, but it is defined in that the return is not necessarily entirely financial.
Yeah.
There's a social impact
right.
Associated with it. And so, you know, if you have corporations at one end of the spectrum and nonprofits that are completely reliant on philanthropy at the other end of the spectrum, social enterprise is not either one of those. It's in between.
Yeah.
Does that help?
Yes, it does. It's confusing. And I think it's a new term, and it's good to talk about it and help people think about it.
It's a new term, but not a new concept, of course. Uh-huh. It's been going on forever.
Yeah.
People have been doing this kind of thing forever.
That's true. I mean, not everyone is motivated by profit. They're motivated by solving problems.
Zoe's a perfect example of a social enterprise.
Right.
That's actually how I started it and noticed the issues that we had in our state, our obesity, our allergy, our limitations to rural Alaskan health, nutrition for infants and toddlers. And I said, oh, that's something that I have a little bit of experience with medicine. I have a little bit of experience with Greek and Italian heritage cooking. Combine the two. Solve the issue of having that healthy, natural, helping the community overcome these obstacles that so many families face. It's just horrendous.
Is your food? It's available in Anchorage. Is it available in Fairbanks? Is it available in Barrow?
No, we're actually working on our equipment. Mm-hmm. That right now we're trying to get a big investment in creating the 25,000 units that would be comfortable for our state. Mm-hmm. To have this distribution. Currently, families either contact us directly through our website or Facebook page, email, or we were in Nusagaya for quite a bit of a time, and because it's also a frozen product, it's kind of different that we need to be able to put refrigeration in the baby food aisle versus the frozen pastry aisle to go and find the baby food.
You know, it strikes me that we've had that old style baby food forever, and we've known about what temperature does to nutrition. And so it sometimes you're just like, why is it me that had to come up with this idea? I mean, we've had, you know, working families and baby food instead of everything being made at home for a long time. Yes. But I mean, what was it about you where that idea came together?
Well, you know, how often do we really enjoy eating food out of a jar? You know, and then you say, well, our children don't like the food, the baby food that they're eating. And then they start eating that salty, sweet, you know, French fries or things like that, that it's more tantalizing to their flavors. And so I said, well, what you have to create a baby food that tastes good. So that way you can introduce the vegetables, introduce the proteins, the carbohydrates, and make that perfect balance. One, that it's going to taste good, but at the same time, don't compromise the nutrition aspect. Mm-hmm. By putting it in the shelf-stable aspect, you start to compromise what happens to the nutrition and, of course, the flavor. Mm-hmm. So with that being said, I started, you know, doing our testing, going back from our geriatrics community that I was working in Texas. That's how I started with my recipes, is I was helping the families in those communities that the parents didn't want to eat any more of the food that they were given from the hospitals. Mm-hmm. And it goes back to the same thing, because they were basically being given baby food. Mm-hmm. Well, you have all your life to help your taste buds grow and mature, and then all of a sudden you take that back.
Yeah.
So I reformulated those recipes that I had for the geriatrics or different types of medical restriction diets. And then with our babies, I said, well, we need more fatty substances. And for example, olive oil. You wouldn't use a chicken breast where you would use it for an adult. You would use a chicken thigh because it has more iron and things like that.
Yeah.
So combining those flavors, putting them together, making it something convenient for the family to remove. Right now you see in stores those little packages, those little squeeze packets, and many times the parents just give it to them and the baby just squeeze it into their mouth. Well, they haven't taken community isn't aware of the issues of just giving your baby that self-feeding squeeze bottle, because you're kind of continuing the bottle feeding, which is doesn't allow the muscles to develop in the in the face.
No chewing going on.
Yes. And of course, you know, that communication and that aspect of
the social.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That connection with a mother or child or parent or father.
Why
or
we love food and love eating.
So if you have the child enjoy the food that they're eating and introduce those vegetables in early on that taste good, they're going to continue to eat healthy throughout their life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where if you make a carrot, a boiled carrot that has no flavor in it, you know, carrots are sweet, so that's an easy one.
No wonder kids hate vegetables, right? That's how we got there. Yeah, yeah.
Make it taste good, and they'll continue to want to eat it for their life.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I kind of wanted to hear how it developed for you, you know, the thinking. I mean, because I'm thinking there might be people in the audience thinking, well, I have an idea, but how do you get from A to Z? Or, you know, and it's a real walk, you know, it's a real thinking and getting information. Did you have to get, you mentioned testing, and I'm imagining part of this is, you know, getting nutrition testing and things like that. Like, are the nutrients holding up in your process? And you've done all that.
Different boiling points where they start to lose their nutritional content and their value in them. Try to continue at the same time, keep the nutrition on there, but continue to have the combination of flavors.
Yeah.
Intriguing. Yeah.
I have to say, we have a caller, and he's a colleague of yours, Zoe. Al. Hi, Al. Welcome to Hometown Alaska.
Good afternoon. How are you two doing?
Well, there's actually four of us here.
Oh, boy.
I'm in trouble.
I know that voice.
Oh, that one sounds like Joe Morris.
Yes. Hi, Al. I guess I've met Al Herman. This must be Al Herman. Is that right?
Yes.
Oh, hi, Al.
Correct.
So what bright light of information are you going to share with us about entrepreneurism?
I really just wanted to call in and say a couple things about entrepreneurship. I've been here 6 years as a professor of entrepreneurship, and in the last year and a half to 2 years, I've seen so much more activity than I saw in the first 4 years. And I wanted to just give a shout out to some things that I think have contributed to that, and just say thank you to people who are really bringing the entrepreneurship ecosystem up to where we want it to be with other cities and other places around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're starting to get there. And I think the 49th State Fund that Alan Johnston and Lucinda got for the city, and Joe Morrison worked hard to bring to fruition, has really been a major, major step in helping us drive entrepreneurship. People now know there's money available through the various funds that are out there. A second one is the boardroom. The ladies that have started that have put together a location for sole practitioners, but also a lot of entrepreneurs and wannabe entrepreneurs. The Million Cup event on Wednesdays, the startup weekends. We have an event coming up on the 27th, which I'll plug a little bit here real quickly. That's for startup entrepreneurs, where we're going to give them free advice from experts within the fields of accounting and insurance, legal, graphic design, website. All these things are coming together because of the boardroom, because of the funds, and also because of a gentleman named Kai Holland over at APU, who's really brought APU, I think, up a notch on entrepreneurship. They were good, but they're really becoming very, very strong with Kai Holland's and what he was the head of the startup weekends and put all that together, and he's working on so many projects that we really are seeing, like I said, a really groundswell of entrepreneurship, and there are a lot of people here that need to be thanked for that. And I want to just give a shout out to the Joe Morrisons, the Alan Johnstons, the Catherines and Brits of the world, and Kai Hollins, who have really, and my partner Forrest Neighbors in the fund, along with
Alan, I want to ask you a question, and I'm happy for you to thank people, because really that's how things happen. People make a commitment, and so I'm not trying to stop that at all. But I just,
no, that's good. No, I'm done.
Yeah. Well, I know I wanted to ask you, you know, you've been here 6 years. What's changed? I mean, you're talking about the education has changed, the opportunities to learn has changed. But, you know, was there, I'm just curious about why we had this hill to climb, you know. What do you think? Well, I mean, you've been around the country.
Well, first of all, I think, you know, when you go to other locations, I come from Atlanta and Philadelphia area, which I know really well, both of them, and a little bit in New York. They've had entrepreneurship and technology stuff there for many, many years, going back to the 70s and 80s. Alaska has always been a resource extraction industry-based economy,
mm-hmm.
With mining and timber and fishing and oil, obviously, and people have gravitated towards those industries. They don't think that, hey, I can start a business.
Mm-hmm.
And now we have a guy like Jason Smith, who is starting an indoor farming entity.
Mm-hmm.
He already has clients for his product.
Mm-hmm.
We will start seeing that in the spring coming to fruition. And people now can say, hey, I've got an idea. I've got a passion. I've got money now. There's a fund here that can fund me. I don't have to go out of state.
Mm-hmm.
I've got people that can support us. We've got lots of individuals that we're seeing come out through the boardroom and other places that can give them support and help. We've got the programs that are helping. Mm-hmm. We've got more education going on. I'm seeing more and more students coming to classes that want to start businesses than I did 6 years ago. I think it's all just a groundswell.
Yeah.
I think all these things have added up together to bring together entrepreneurship to a level that I'm really excited about.
Hmm.
I mean, guys like Alan Johnson and others that have worked this for many, many years, have really worked through a lot of the details and all. But now we're at that tipping point where I think in the next few years, if we start this accelerator, we're going to work on an accelerator, which is the old incubator-type concept. If we can pull that off, we will then be right up there with so many other cities around the country.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a lot of things going for Alaska. We have a great, we got the cachet of this being in Alaska. We got logistics, we got fishing, we've got other things. Even we see a lot of people doing apps here. We've got a lot of people doing things that if they could just stay here and get the support, not just money, but the support of building a business, they could be very successful.
And thrive,
that's where I think it's coming from.
Yeah. Joe, did you want to jump in there?
You know, I just wanted to say Al's pretty humble. Al worked for 18 months to, he has 4 co-managers now for his angel fund that he's co-founded, but he worked for 18 months to close that sucker. And he's responsible for like 4 businesses in town, and he is a professor of entrepreneurship at UAA. He's a practitioner and an academic, and I just want to say thanks to Al.
And
well, thank you, Joe. You didn't have to do that. I'll give you the money later.
Yeah, well, you know, that's $100, Al.
It is a consulting fee, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, could we name some businesses that so that people know something that has actually gone through this process? I know we've, you know, Bambino's is a food, but it didn't go through
Bambino's
this process.
Bambino's is one that we're looking at, obviously, to work with.
Oh, okay.
Zoe is an awesome entrepreneur. She's got an unbelievable background and a passion for what she's doing, and we're working with her as we speak to try to see if we can't work with her business to maybe finance it and grow it. We also are working with another business in town called Technologies. We have a...
What is that, Al? What is Petnot?
That's a cooled and heated container that they use for shipping products around in commercial airplanes.
Oh, okay.
You know, it's another product in business we like to try to help. We already have invested in McKinnon Marine, which is the Alumiski, which is now being sold and being produced here up in the valley, but also worked out of Anchorage. We have the indoor farming that we have syndicated with another venture fund or angel fund, I should say, to get him started. And Jason has the building at the old, I guess it's called the McNewsta Maid building on Northern Lights, just by Arctic. He is building that out and should be able to be processing and having product sometime in April, May. So they're the businesses that we have started and have working on. Then we have, but way back when I did a distillery, which I'm kind of pulling out of, but there are businesses out there that...
I think you know, customers are interested in knowing, well, this is an Alaska business, maybe I'll support it. And some of them are not that consumer broadly, the reach isn't out so much. It's a very targeted audience that they're serving. But Al, I just want to say thank you so much for taking the time to call in. It's nice to hear from you. And
no problem.
And I can hear the energy in your voice that has to be part of being an entrepreneur.
He's amazing.
Yeah.
Very amazing.
I don't think Al sleeps. I'm guessing that he does.
He's constantly caffeinated or something.
All right.
I'll get off on this word. It's been a labor of love working with all the people I've had a chance to work with. It's been awesome. And I thank you for what all of you are doing and for this, like, this program to get the word out there. Thank you very much. And guys, have a great day.
All right.
Thank you, Al.
You take care,
bye.
Al.
Bye-bye.
So we're going to come right back in about a minute. We have Eric McCallum on the phone. So we're going to come back and introduce Eric and talk with him. But we're going to take a little break. You're listening to Hometown Alaska. And this is Kathleen McCoy.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 9 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Hometown Alaska on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy, and our topic today is entrepreneurism. I said after oil, you know, kind of like we're going over a cliff. What are we going to do? Can we look to the entrepreneurs to save us? And of course, that's a false question, and we talked about it earlier. But the truth is we do need to diversify a lot. And I would like to welcome onto the show, we have a guest, Eric McCollum. I talked about him perhaps calling in. Welcome to Hometown Alaska, Eric.
Hi, Kathleen. Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate it. And we are here with Joe Morrison, Zoe Marudas, and Stephanie Holthaus. And, you know, I just kind of want to say you're someone who's been investing in Alaska businesses. When I say after oil, do you get scared, or that doesn't even really change the equation, or how does it influence your thinking?
You mean as far as investing goes?
Yeah, and entrepreneurship thriving here and growing.
Well, I think one of the things that you and I have talked about and we've seen in the past is whether you're talking about cluster development or whether you're talking about really springboarding entrepreneurship and the culture that it needs is oftentimes states have done really well or cities or areas have done really well because they've had to. And I think this,
Fisher cut bait.
it's a silver lining in a possibly challenging environment, but I think that's, and for the same reason, that's how a lot of entrepreneurs get started. So the analogy is that your back is up against the wall, whether you're a municipality or a state, and you need to make a change, and so you're forced to be creative and to be innovative, and that is also how I think a lot of entrepreneurs start as well.
So we don't need to throw up our hands and be in a panic, but we do need to, our back is against the wall, and we have to start thinking and planning and doing. One of the things I know you do is, by the way, I didn't really, I mentioned that you're an angel investor, but you have also been an entrepreneur yourself, and you are also focused on microfinancing and, you know, eliminating poverty. And so you have both the entrepreneur and the social entrepreneur in you. But before we go there, because we have Stephanie here, and I told Stephanie you and she would probably go at it a little bit on social entrepreneurs. But, you know, the mentorship role, that's one that you probably particularly play. And when I was talking with you the other day before the show, it's, you know, I got the sense of a hard taskmaster, you know, someone who says, here's the test, let's see how you're doing. Can you speak a little bit about that challenge that goes between the mentor and the new entrepreneur?
Well, sure. I mean, I think when someone comes up with an idea or is, you know, oftentimes they tend to be younger, so they've only lived half as long as I have, and so they're not yet demoralized or or cynical. but they're always glass is very half full kind of approach, and you need them to be, you want them to be. But there tends to be a lot of assumptions, and more so than that, unvalidated assumptions. And so, you know, what I see my role as a lot of times is forcing the entrepreneurs to actually validate their assumptions and tell me why your validation is good. Because, you know, there's just, this romanticism around entrepreneurship right now, and especially around social entrepreneurship. And it's, you know, people underestimate how challenging it is and all the steps that they need to go through. Mm-hmm. And some they have to repeat, some you have to go back to go and start over, you know, all this kind of stuff. And and so it's, you know, I tend to be more of a wet blanket than I do, everything's perfect, you go for it, and you know, here's a check, yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad that you said that. I had heard you, I think you said it to me the other day, I am a wet blanket, and I didn't want to call you that, but it's part of the testing, I guess, and the groundwork that has to go on, and I don't know, I sort of want to invite Stephanie, you and Eric have had conversations about this. What did you learn from maybe that process?
We have, and I guess I would say, Eric, that your wet blanket approach makes you a valuable mentor. That's why that's why we always come to you.
Mm-hmm.
And
thank you.
Yeah, I don't know. Eric is a social entrepreneur. He's funding social enterprise, big and small. So he knows as much about it as I do, or more, much more probably. And I guess my question for you, Eric, is, you know, why? I don't see it as very different than any other kind of entrepreneurship. You still have to have all the things that you have to be any kind of an entrepreneur. Don't you think?
You're absolutely right, Stephanie. But I think there is a tendency to assume that because you have a righteous cause in social entrepreneurship, because you're doing good things, that there are shortcuts that you can take, and there really aren't. And I think the problem is that certain people think it's different, and it, to your point, it isn't.
Right.
And you and I have talked about the fact that sometimes, especially in the social entrepreneur world, it tends to be supply-driven versus demand-driven. And so, and what I mean by that is, somebody comes across a group of poor women in the third world country who can make trinkets, and they go about trying to figure out how to sell those in the West. And so they create a business, and they realize how challenging it is, because it's just because these women can make these items doesn't necessarily mean there's a demand for them in the, you know, it's just that's what they can make. And so
right.
I think, trying to make sure that it's hard enough to create a sustainable business when there is good demand, mm-hmm. let alone when there right. isn't any at all.
Mm-hmm. Right. So what you're saying really is you have to apply the business principles that you would in any business mm-hmm. to the social enterprise startup. I agree with that totally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the things, Stephanie, that I remember having a conversation with you about was that, and I've heard this discussed, why do we feel that it's okay to pay a for-profit manager a lot of money and a nonprofit manager, so we churn through the people in social areas, and partly because maybe they are out, their funding is not sustainable, or they... it just doesn't get up on its. And so you churn through people by not paying them enough. I remember that discussion we had.
Yeah, I think though you're speaking more to the nonprofit world than you are to social enterprise, which is more
right. Business. Well, I saw this as this sort of a step away from that might make these social enterprises, these problem solving efforts, more sustainable. Is what I'm trying to get at.
Yeah, right. I guess that's part of the concept, and that's what's interesting to me is that yes, a social enterprise presumably has business practices that either allow it to be sustainable or self-funding,
mm-hmm,
or
mm-hmm.
so it's not philanthropy driven.
Stick with it. You know, the people who want to work in that area can actually stick with it.
Yeah,
and don't
exactly.
have to quit and get another job because they can't sustain themselves working in this area they love.
Exactly.
So, yeah, that was a new idea for me. Go ahead, Eric.
If I can add, I think there is a tendency, I admit that I'm somewhat guilty of this, is to, I come from the for-profit world, and I'm trying to do maybe some good things, and those are the kind of entrepreneurs that I look for, because if you come from the other direction, so I'm, shall we say that I'm right, more right, and moving more towards central, because I'm a capitalist piglet or whatever.
Okay.
I think it's more challenging if you come from the nonprofit world to try to create a for-profit social enterprise, because it really is, it isn't your background, it isn't your mission, it isn't, and so I think it, I just, as a rule of thumb, find it a little bit easier to try to help support people that come from the for-profit world who are trying to move more central and trying to come up with actually doing good while they're making a company, sustainable. But the best way to make a company sustainable, whether it's a social enterprise or regular, is to make it profitable.
Right.
I mean, that's the simple.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, the ground rule there.
Yeah.
I wanted to sort of ask you, since you have a platform and you're steeped in this, what do you want to leave us with? If there's one thing you just, maybe you've said it already, it's like test, but what would you leave our audience with about the future of entrepreneurship here?
You're asking me, right?
Yes, I am, Eric. I'm sorry.
No.
I mean, it is hard work. It can be extremely rewarding. But, you know, it requires a lot of due diligence, not only on the investor's part, but also on the entrepreneur's part. And, you know, when I put together my business plan 30 years ago to form my company, you know, I know I needed to do it to get bank financing, but I also needed to do it to convince myself that these numbers can actually, you know, can work. And once I get, you know, and here is my break even, and here's what sort of outside capital I'm going to have, and how, you know, how much do I have to sell per month? I mean, these are all the things that people need to be interested in. They need to be engaged in the financials. They need to find the financials interesting, because that's probably the only way you're going to make it. And a lot of people are more enamored with the idea or with whatever invention they've created.
The notion of success that they hope for.
Yeah. And you really got to grow to understand the numbers and appreciate them and to follow them, especially in the early days when you're dealing with the valley of death. Yeah.
Well, I'm going to say goodbye, Eric, and thank you so much for taking the time. We have another entrepreneur that called in, and we'd love to give him a shot to talk about his business. But thank you so much for taking the time. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure, Kathy. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Hello, Ian. Can you hear? Are you on Hometown Alaska? How are you?
I'm doing well.
Now,
I'm bored.
Very happy to have you. Thank you for taking the time. Why don't you describe your business?
Well, at Fairweather Ski Works, my partner Graham Kraft and I, we handcraft just one-of-a-kind wooden skis and snowboards, and trying to use as much local material as possible, and that's really the basis of it there.
Where's your business?
We're located in Haines. Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty interesting.
My home,
I mean,
shop there.
From what I've sort of, you know, listening in on the entrepreneurship conversation is that, you know, people might think, oh, Anchorage, of course, we'll get businesses going there, or Fairbanks, or these big, you know, population centers, because we know we need an audience. But you're in a different, you know, you're in a more rural area, and maybe we're going to see more of that. I'm sort of looking at you, Joe, because I think you said that that's something of a trend that we're starting to see.
You know, it's interesting. There is a lot of regional focus, both in the Southeast area and now with Bristol Bay Native Corporation. They set up their own development fund on ensuring that you're investing back in the region where you come from and where your shareholders are from to increase opportunities locally.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was so cool that Haines essentially swept the Southeast competition.
Yes, that's
this
how
year.
I heard about you, Ian, was the Pathway to Prosperity was some kind of a competition. And go ahead, Steph.
I'm just thinking about how it's tying the nonprofit, the for-profit, and the social enterprise world all together, because the Path to Prosperity is in part funded by the Nature Conservancy.
Oh, so, didn't know that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's just a really cool way that a nonprofit, or multiple nonprofits actually, are helping develop this economic base that is sustainable and is promoting local. So it's a wonderful thing.
Ian, I also, you and I chatted just before the show when we learned that you were going to be able to call in. I was so happy to hear that. One of the things you talked about was that there's a benefit to coming from a small rural area where everyone knows you. I mean, it's almost like you have a fan club built in. They want to see you succeed. And I mean, you expressed that to me over the phone.
There have been a lot of opportunities, you know, that relate to coming from a small town, you know, and that we get enormous community support and, you know, in a variety of ways. And as well, there's a lot of easier media access. So just as far as getting the word out there, it's easy to get into the newspapers and you know, radio shows and whatnot like that in a small place.
Mm-hmm. So that's great. And I also said to you, you know, if you, I'm not really clear on your entire path and how it all began, and we probably don't have time for that, but if there was one lesson that you feel like you've really learned, maybe it's Eric's lesson about test your numbers, but what would, if you were sort of, you know, speaking to a class of entrepreneurs or wannabe entrepreneurs, what's a lesson you've learned or something you changed based on your experience?
Well, I guess one of the big things that I've learned along the way is to really identify your market and learn how to reach out to them and connect with your customers, because you know, neither my partner nor I had any real business experience before this, and we have, you know, the capacity to create lots of product there, but then it doesn't do you any good unless you can sell it to somebody. And so that's been a lot of new learning for us there. Mm-hmm. And coming from a rural area, I mean, there are still plenty of opportunities to reach out to a broader market than just your locality. But it's good to figure that out ahead of time.
You're making skis and snowboards, right? Is that right?
Mm-hmm. That's right, yeah.
And, I mean, you know, your market would go way beyond Hanes, for sure. You know,
it does. You know, we've sold them in Lower 48, and we had one order from Italy even, which is fun, our first international order. Hmm. But, you know, one of the opportunities that we saw in Hanes is that we're right at the center of a ton of media attention focused on the big mountain skiing in that area.
Mm-hmm.
And so it seemed like, how can we not be doing this right now? It's a total unoccupied niche here waiting for us to start building skis in Alaska, which really hasn't, you know, been done much up there yet.
Right.
And so
right.
We just thought, well, God, we've got to try this. And,
yeah,
We found that it's been a very approachable process actually getting started with this business.
And I believe that what you just won was some money to put into your business, right? $40,000, I think, something like that. Do you know what you're going to do? Is there a need that you're going to address right away?
Absolutely. There's several. You know, the money can only be used for, as they call it, technical and consulting services. And so we'll get, you know, tax and accounting advisors in there to kind of help us straighten out our books and teach us how to do it in the process.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the big things we're going to do is join, it's called the Snow Sports Industry of America. It's kind of like a trade organization there, and it's that's just going to be a huge amount of marketing for us there, and a way to kind of rub shoulders with others in the industry and kind of get our product out there a little further. So that's kind of the direction that we're going to go there, is just trying to extend our marketing outreach and actually learn how to run a business, which neither of us actually did.
So you can be a beginner, right? You can really be a beginner. Well, Ian, thank you so much for taking the time. I guess you're outside the U.S. or outside of Alaska right now, right? You're in South?
For a couple more days, and then I'm heading back home, thank goodness.
Yeah, okay. Well, welcome back, and congratulations on that Pathways to Prosperity Award, and we'll be watching for your boards, I guess, and your skis. So thank you very much for calling in.
Thank you very much.
You take care. I'd like to welcome Catherine Dernstrom to Hometown Alaska. Hi, Catherine.
Hi, Kathleen. How are you?
I am very fine, and I really appreciate you taking the time to call. We've been kind of circling around and talking about the climate that entrepreneurs need. And, of course, your firm was mentioned once already by one of our callers, Al Herman, who talked about it. But I guess I'd just like to you're an entrepreneur yourself, you know, and you also have what looks like a thriving hub for entrepreneurship. So speak to that climate and how you guys figured out your niche and some of that.
Sure. Yeah, I you know, I've been listening to the radio show and I heard Al talking and he's right. There's been a lot that's been going on in the past couple of years that is exciting and adding some momentum to this entrepreneur ecosystem that we're just starting to build. You know, these are systems that that take time to build. Other cities have gone through this very same process that we're going through, and a lot of people say it's, you know, at least a decade or more. Mm-hmm. That you need to take time in investing at certain stages to really have that successful ecosystem that can rival something like replacing an economy, which you know, you mentioned in your introduction.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're really at the beginning part, and what we do at the Boardroom is, you know, focusing on connecting people, on educating, providing opportunity, and promoting what our entrepreneurs are doing. You know, it's that kind of beginning step of this thriving ecosystem is all about recognizing and celebrating what emerging entrepreneurs are doing and promoting, building that you know, positive public image of the entrepreneur and this and the struggles they go through and what they need to succeed.
Mm-hmm.
And participating through all of the events. I saw on your website, you know, we have 1 million cups, a weekly pitch event here. We have a quarterly entrepreneur school that we founded in partnership with AADC. And I'm working with a team of people, including, you know, Joe and Al on the phone, to launch an accelerator. So there's a lot that's happening, but we're very young still. It's exciting, lots of opportunity, lots of challenges, though.
I have a quick question for you. Could you describe what 1 Million Cups is? I think it's some kind of pitching opportunity, but for those of us who aren't there yet, help us out with what that is.
Sure, yeah. 1 Million Cups, it's a program that was developed by the Kauffman Foundation 2 or 3 years ago, and it was developed by a group of entrepreneurs, which this whole ecosystem, you know, has to be led by entrepreneurs. And so they saw that Kansas City at the time had a really fragmented ecosystem. There's a lot of people doing really interesting things, but no one was connecting with each other, sharing information, supporting each other. So they asked the question, you know, how could we change our community, our entrepreneur community, over 1 million cups of coffee? You know, how would it change? And so that was where the name came from. And the idea is it's a weekly event. Right now it happens in over 60 cities nationwide at 9 a.m. every Wednesday morning. And it's a different entrepreneur or two different groups of entrepreneurs. They have 6 minutes. They pitch their business or their concept, and then they get 20 minutes of feedback from the audience. And the feedback, you know, they're not pitching to funders. They're pitching to an audience of peers and mentors and you know, funders, but people from the community that pose good questions and identify gaps and opportunities. Mm-hmm. And it's about educating and supporting that growth.
Sort of what Eric's, you know, vetting and testing that he talked about. Catherine, one more thing. I know we're running out of time, and I just, one thing Eric had said to me the other day on the phone when we were talking about the show is he's like, you know, going into After Oil, what you capitalize on your strengths, and one of them was the quality of life here. And I remember hearing you and Britt talk about making a choice to be here and prove that you could have a business here and have the quality of life that you want. And it just resonated when I heard Eric talking that way. And I just kind of wanted to bring that up because that sort of represents to me a little bit about what the boardroom is, you know, a choice to be here and make it work. So,
well, and I think, you know, to follow up on that, I don't want us to discount how attractive Alaska can be, and not just because of the outdoors, although that's really attractive for many people. But this is an attractive place for companies to grow. And as this ecosystem takes, you know, gathers momentum and speed and grows, it's important for our state leaders, our local leaders, our, you know, economic development companies, and our entrepreneurs to all be on board with making Alaska this attractive global place. And a competitive place globally for startups to scale up and grow here.
Catherine, we are just about out of time. I'm so sorry, but I'm glad that we got to hear from you and hear your perspective. And I have to say thank you. And we just kind of have to say thank you and then wish entrepreneurs a good luck and go visit the boardroom. get a good dose. All right. Thank you so much, Catherine. I really appreciate it. I have probably time for you to say 2 or 3 words each if you would like to something to leap. Nope, shaking head. How about you, Zoe?
I would like to say thank you to Kathleen and Britt and Al and Joe Morrison for inviting me to the Million Cups. I actually presented there, and it was very, very nice because you were able to get some wonderful feedback and actually share your idea with a large audience.
And you survived it, right? It's like that terrifying moment when you get up with your idea, but you survived it. Yeah. And okay. Well, we have to go. Joe, I was going to give you a last word. But
rats.
it's been a great hour talking about entrepreneurs here in Alaska. Thanks both to our callers and to my guests, Joe Morrison, Zoe Morudas, and Stephanie Holthaus. And we, on the phone, listened to Catherine Jernstrom, Eric McCollum, and Ian Seward. Next week, Charles Wolforth will be back as your host, talking about and with performers who mix Native heritage with other cultural influences. Hometown Alaska is on the web at alaskapublic.org. You can join us on Facebook at Alaska Public. Pat Yak is Vice President of Public Media. Evan Erickson is our web editor and audio engineer. Thanks so much for joining us today on Hometown Alaska. I'm Kathleen McCoy.
Home Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.